I get to the point where the one thing I wanted was to be left alone in my own cube. That was the one thing I could depend on, my cube.
Well, after you're in them a while, it,
Yeah, my cube was a little older than this one. The panels on the walls were square instead of rectangular like yours.
Oh, dear.
You know, I don't think I've ever been this long away from my cube before. I wonder if I left anything there. I could go back to check. They probably haven't even noticed I'm gone.
Yeah, but if you go now, you may never get out again.
Getting out is no problem. But they're liable to catch me if I go back. It's not worth the risk.
No, I wouldn't think so.
What do you know about it? You haven't even got any squares in this rotten cube. You don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like to need a place where there are squares that you can depend on. Oh, how I love those squares. I think I'd better go back.
Wait, before you go, can you tell me how to get out of here?
Get your hands off me! You and your rectangles! I've got to go back! Oh, yes, I'm going back. I'm coming back! Here I come! I'm coming!
All right, ready to go?
Yes.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Lucky Paper Radio. My name is Andy and I'm here as always with my co-host, Anthony, owner of The Longest Road, Maddox.
Oh, you did it. I thought for sure you were going to not do it and do something else.
No, I don't want to lose Aaron's trust in me. I don't want to betray his trust.
I played Settlers of Catan and all I got was The Longest Road.
It's been so long since I played that game. All I remember about it is that it's a resource management game that I don't like as much as Carcassonne.
It's a resource management game, but there's a lot of... I feel like the trading is a big aspect to it, which is difficult.
Yeah, because the trading, there's no... Are there hard rules around the trading, or is it just like wheeling and dealing whatever you can get someone to agree to?
Just wheeling and dealing. I think you're not allowed to trade when it's not your turn, which I was scolded for trying to do.
I'm sure we have lots of invested Settlers of Catan players in our listenership. It's a very beloved game, but yeah, it's
classic.
It's not my favorite personally, but I'm glad you made The Longest Road. What do that mean? Do you get some sort of transit badge? Did you get multiple victory points for your long road?
Wear the transit hat? I don't know. Yeah, you get points.
You get to wear the high vis vest of the transit lord.
Oh.
Is it your pick in the Rotodraft?
I'm not double queuing. I'm not doing this. No way. I swear if Patrick took a green card, I'm going to punch somebody.
He didn't. He took a couple lands from me, but what are you going to do?
Okay, great.
Why can't Patrick... You got to give Patrick edit access. He says he still can't edit it.
He's got to just hit the button.
What's your next pick going to be, Anthony?
Saprolings.
Thelonite. Druid.
I am going
Thelonite
to
Hermit. That's
do
the
that.
One.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one I would do too. And then, I may as well come out pretty soon. I don't want to turn people onto your strategy at all. But I have some ideas for what you should take.
Strategy.
Oh, wait, look.
Very,
oh, it's my pick
very,
now.
Very strong word.
Oh, it's my pick now.
We're starting a very ill-advised rotisserie draft of my irregular cube. This is the cube that has our rare module. So the way that we set it up is I randomly shuffled up the list of rares. So normally there would just be a couple of these rares in each pack. But we're trying to make that work in a rotisserie draft by randomly adding some selection to the rotisserie, which is very weird. Usually in a rotisserie draft, there's like a pretty flat power level. There's lots of like defined strategies and reasonable cards, and here it's just like there are
somebody got mind twist
15 cards that are just way better than all the other cards. And like, this cube was very much designed for booster drafting because it's kind of fun to have that, like, oh, I opened up this one cool card that's like really powerful or like changes my draft in a really dramatic way. It's very different in a face-up draft.
I think it's kind of cool.
Seem to be having more fun, by which I mean people seem angrier than I expected them to be, so hopefully it's actually working out well.
Let's get into this briefly, because, you know, people love when we break down dumb little drafts we're doing. It's the point of this show, basically.
Yes.
The rare module happened to spit out Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker, which is in the rare module. Pestermite's not in the rare module, right? It's just in the cube?
Correct.
So there is a Kiki combo in this cube, which is otherwise pretty low-powered, but it's just that. There's no redundancy for it. If you don't get Pestermite, there's no Deceiver Exarch, there's no Village Bell Ringer, there's no Zealous Conscripts. It's just those two cards. And I was seat 7 of 9 and was hoping I would maybe...
7 of 9. Star Wars thing.
That's a Star Wars thing?
Nope, Star Trek. Just cut all this.
wait, what's that? If it's a Star Trek thing, I should know it.
No, it's from Voyager.
Oh, it's not from the Next Generation. Well, then I don't know it, because it's not from the best series. Anyway, I was wondering if there's maybe a chance Kiki-Jiki would make it to me. I didn't think it was possible. Frankly, I thought it would go even earlier, but it went one seat before me. Seat 6 took Kiki-Jiki, and thereby expecting to get this Pestermite, because who would possibly want Pestermite? It's not that good of a card. There's some really powerful cards to be taking these first two picks. You have to just be kind of solely seeking to hate on the drafter in seat 6 by taking that Pestermite, which I'm here to say I was 100% willing to do, because this person called out that I probably wanted the Geeky combo and took it one seat before me, and I was like, I'll take this. I'll take it from you. So I started with the Drakehaven, which is actually was my third most desired lane to go down when I looked at this list and made some decisions at the beginning, thinking I would have to take Pestermite on the wheel right before it got back to his drafter number 6. But then, Anthony, drafter number 9 revealed that they wanted to go pick 1, pick 2, Isochron Scepter, Pestermite, without any plans to do a Kiki combo. I think they just want to untap their Isochron Scepter with the Pestermite. And so the Kiki drafter got totally hated out of their combo. And also, I didn't even have to be the one to hate it. I got to take something good for my second pick instead of Pestermite, which is fine.
I'm so happy for you. I'm glad this happened to you.
I'm happy with how the draft is going so far. I think it's going to be a spicy one.
My draft is an absolute train wreck, and I feel bad about it.
You should have just gone hard saplings. Like I said, it would have been so easy.
I mean, so, it was clear I was either going to go blue or green, but there are two green cards that had already been taken, whereas blue just felt more open. You were the only one that had taken a blue card, so I just, was like, okay, I'll just take the best two blue cards, and then everybody else jumped into blue. And now everybody's jumped into green. It's just rude what they've done to me here.
It's really interesting you think those are the two best blue cards, first of all. But second of all, what does the really good blue deck look like in this cube?
I don't know anything.
You got to think about the decks, man, not the individual cards. There's a whole Sapperling deck there that no one's touching. And now you're getting into, but you missed 4 picks on your Sapperling deck, which could have been great. And now you have to fight more for fixing or something because you don't have time to take it. It'd be fine. Everything can be fine. We're not talking about rotisserie drafting on this episode of Lucky Paper Radio, though. Maybe another one soon, because we do love doing rotos. It's a true joy of our playgroup. Instead, we are talking about... Is it fair to call these draft matters cards, Anthony? Is that the most succinct and descriptive way to describe the kinds of cards we're talking about here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would have just called them draft matters, but since you've asked and you've made me think about it a little bit more, it is kind of something distinct. Usually when we talk about blank matters in Magic, it usually just means we have cards that reference something specific about the game. So in an enchantment matters set, you'll have cards that say whenever you cast an enchantment, get some kind of bonus. These are actually kind of different. These are just cards that actually have mechanical stuff that happens while you're drafting. So it's not just about what goes into your deck, but these are things that sort of turn the experience of doing a booster draft into its own kind of game that has its own mechanics and interactions and cards that you can use to manipulate what's happening during the draft portion of the game.
Yeah, we're talking about the cards that were just printed in the two conspiracy sets that basically have special instructions on them that tell you how to draft with them that somehow modify or bend or break the rules of a typical booster draft. Why do you think these are only relegated to conspiracy sets? I mean, is there any reason they couldn't do this in a typical standard set if they wanted to?
They definitely could, but what's weird about it is just that, drafting isn't really codified as its own type of gameplay in a competitive sense. So these have basically no function in something like standard. In any constructed format, these aren't going to have any impact.
Well, all these cards also do things in your deck, regardless of their... Also, of their draft implications.
That's true. Typically, I mean, they're balanced in such a way that it's mostly focused on the drafting part. Yeah, I mean, they could. I would kind of like it if they did. I mean, honestly, we've talked in the past about how we don't really think it's a great idea. Well, it's not our preference for Wizards to make a cube product, but if they were going to do anything for cube, I would love to see more effort put into exploring this kind of design space.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting way to spice up a cube draft and spice up your cube a little bit by changing the way the draft works. I think it's a great way to add some variety if you are drafting the same cube repeatedly, and maybe it's getting a little bit repetitive. I don't want to say stale, because drafting is always interesting, I think. I could draft the same cube a whole bunch before I would get really bored of it. But, you know, it's a nice way to kind of add some variety and spice to the actual draft experience itself. I will say, of the it's 28 cards you said that we're gonna be talking about today.
Yeah, there were a couple more than that had been tagged on Scryfall as draft matters. I cut a few that I don't quite think make sense, but they do fall into a couple different discrete chunks of, you know, things that they can care about, things that they can interact with. I do want to just say here at the beginning, just be super clear about this. I think one of these kinds of mechanics is great, and in particular, one of these individual cards is fantastic. It's just one of my all-time favorite cards, and I think we want to really dive deep into Cogwork Librarian in particular.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too, is that, you know, you were saying it'd be nice if they printed, explored this space more. Of all these cards they've printed, there's exactly one that I'm actually interested in playing with. There's a couple others that I have dabbled with in the past that I think are kind of fascinating, but for the most part, I it's hard to imagine more of these kinds of cards that I would be excited to play with, because, I like you said, I think Cogwork Librarian is far and away the best design of this type of thing, and it's so easily slots into any draft without causing any problems. I think it's just perfect, basically. The other ones, I think, all have problems, and it's hard to imagine designing more that are of the Cogwork Librarian caliber, because it is a weird design space to work in.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's what I want to say. It's just that, like, we try and keep it pretty positive here. We're not going to be super positive, I think, about a lot of these mechanics, but it's still, like, interesting design space and worth talking about. But yeah, we can spend a lot of time on the positive, which is Cogwork Librarian.
Let's talk about Cogwork Librarian, Anthony. This has been a one of in your regular cube since its inception, correct?
Yeah, so this card is 4 mana for a 3-3. It's an artifact creature construct.
All this is irrelevant.
That doesn't really matter. But it says, as you draft a card, you may draft an additional card from that booster pack. If you do, put Cogwork Librarian back into the pack. So basically what this does is just let you draft 2 cards at a time, but it doesn't alter the number of cards in the pack because you're putting Cogwork Librarian back in, so you're still ending up with the normal draft mechanics. And really importantly, someone else can then take it out of that pack again, and this can happen multiple times during the draft, which everything about this card just is super fun and works really seamlessly. A lot of things we'll maybe be a little bit critical about is how alterations to the draft end up making things a little bit disruptive, or you get confused because you have different numbers of cards in the pack at the end, which can just be confusing to players. Cogwork Librarian just works. It's just like everything about this is super clean and tidy. It adds this really fun moment where you get to take 2 cards out of a pack, which, I mean, how often in a normal booster draft do you think, man, I wish I could take both these cards?
So often.
It's just like rewards you by giving you that experience that you've asked for many, many times. And the fact that it creates this mini game of you get to pass it potentially to some other player, or, you know, stockpile it after pack 1 so you have it for the beginning of pack 2 is also just a ton of interesting strategic depths. So even for the spikier players, this isn't necessarily just a, like, weird novelty conspiracy thing. This is actually a really powerful effect that is fun to play with.
And really fascinating. Like, I think how you value it at different points in the draft and what you are willing to give up to take a Cogwork Librarian is always a source of interesting table talk, right? And like, discussion of strategy with other players. Like, would you take Librarian here instead of this other card that is good for my deck? So it's been a one-off in the regular cube for a while. I somewhat recently introduced the idea of just, I added 8 Cogwork Librarians to my token box for the Bun Magic cube, with just the idea that if we ever wanted to, we could draft with each player starting with a Cogwork Librarian. Because if there's one thing I don't love about Cogwork Librarian, I'm not even sure there is, because I love this card too, it's maybe that it does, I think, have a pretty powerful effect on your draft, and oftentimes you get in a situation where over 3 packs, 2 players just pass it back and forth between them, because I pass it to you on my left, you take it, and then the next pack, you put it back into the pack and pass it to me to the right, and then I take it. Technically, these cards require that you announce your actions as you take them, which we don't actually always play with that rule. I think it's basically to kind of maintain the clarity of a conspiracy draft, because in the conspiracy set, there were tons of these cards floating around, and so having to announce what was going on, I think, helped make it less confusing in terms of what was happening. Here, it feels bad to be on the other side of the table when people are just passing this librarian back and forth, and you can feel like, oh, their deck is getting 4% better, both of them, because they're getting to, like, play with this card, and I don't even get to touch it.
I think that's hilarious when you're getting salty about that.
I would say I get salty about it, but it's maybe the one thing I don't love about the card. It's just that it does feel like, I mean, obviously where you're sitting at the table always has effect on your draft, but it does feel a little bit outsized sometimes. Anyway, I added 8 to my token box, so if we wanted to, we could just draft with everybody starting with a Cogwork Librarian in their pool. So you just have one, and whenever you want, you could put it back in the pack and just keep drafting. This does make the draft function as normal, with the one exception that basically everyone has 16 cards after pack 1 instead of 15, because everyone started with 1 card in their pool already, which is the Cogwork Librarian. And that's been really, I mean, I feel like it's classic, it's like our classic dynamic. You have a very, like, measured, tasteful approach where you're like, let's put 1 card of this in the regular cube, but the regular cube is bigger than 360, so it's not going to be an every time kind of draft thing. And I'm like, screw it. If we're going to do it, let's do it over the top, and just gave everybody one, which is something I've seen other players do. I definitely didn't, like, come up with this
idea. Yeah, Ryan Sachs definitely does this, and some other people as well, where they're just like, this card's super fun. Why don't we just do a ton of it?
I think it does really change the draft when there are 8 of them and when everyone starts with exactly the same access to a Cogwork Librarian. And we've had some players in our cube that are like, I'm trying to get into pack 2 with 5 or 6 Cogwork Librarians and basically have not committed much to a deck at all and then use those Cogwork Librarians to really capitalize on what I think I've discovered is open at the table in pack 1 versus other people that just draft essentially normally, and if there's nothing for them in the pack, they take the Cogwork Librarian and then, you know, try and work like that. So I think it's a really interesting space to explore. We've played with Cogwork Librarians in these two contexts and others. How highly do you actually value it as a player in a draft?
I think it is extremely powerful, like you're saying, and the power lies in the fact that you can get 2 picks when you sort of have a sense of what is sort of open and happening at the table. It's not so much just that, like, some packs are going... It's not about taking advantage of the asymmetry of packs and some packs just having additional power, but about... Yeah, that information of knowing I'm already in this particular deck, now I'm really going to get rewarded. So I take it pretty highly because it is just like such an open pick. I've definitely first picked it in the regular cube. There are lots of cards I will take over it, so it's not necessarily an auto first pick, but it's a first pick that I'm excited about.
I'm not sure if there's anything in the regular cube I would take over it. Pack one, pick one. I think it's so powerful in pack one. That is when I will take it over pretty much anything else because, like you said... Most of pack one, I'm probably not 100% certain what it is I'm doing because I'm still reading some signals at the table or deciding what feels like it's open. And there, being able to essentially put a pick on layaway, you know, get 2 first picks later on in exchange for my first pick now, which you are just giving up, right? You're just burning a pick because you are not getting a card for your pool at all when you pack one, pick one, a Cogwork Librarian, which is a downside. What you're really doing is putting that pick towards later in the draft when you have a better sense of what it is you're going to be doing. So pack one, pick one, I'm taking it every time in pretty much every cube, I think. It's hard for me to imagine. I guess maybe like a powered cube where it's like, okay, there are only 9 of these super powerful cards floating around in general, or like there's only 5 Moxen. I'll probably take that over a Cogwork Librarian, probably, because you're not likely to open up another one of those in a later pack. But other than stuff, situations like that, I can't imagine pack one, pick one, almost anything over a Cogwork Librarian. Though my pick order does go down, I think, pretty steeply as the draft goes on.
Yeah, I mean, it's really valuable if you can get it in pack one, so pack two is where it's going to be at its strongest because you get to take, either you get 2 cards out of your opening pack, so essentially like you still get your additional pack one, pick one, but it is deferred to a point in the draft where you have more information about what your deck is looking like and what you need. But it can also be just powerful, like if you end up, you know, getting it back out of the pack later on, obviously going into pack 3, you're similarly going to have that really powerful opportunity, and sometimes it just ends up going around like a bunch within individual packs as well.
Yeah, my favorite place to get it is sometime in pack one and then holding it till the beginning of pack two, basically, and then just getting another really early high pick for my deck that I put on layaway, like I mentioned. The other thing I think this can do sometimes is, and this might be just all in my head, but sometimes I feel like you can send really powerful signals with a Cogwork Librarian.
Yeah.
So, for example, I have had moments where I have taken
a
Cogwork Librarian.
You're not drafting Cogwork Librarians.
Well, no. So I've had a... Let's say, for example, I open pack one, pick one. There's some good cards in it, but there's a Cogwork Librarian. I take it. Great. I have definitely had drafts where that exact same pack comes back around, right? It's the same cards that were in the pack that I took the Cogwork Librarian out of, and now I put the Cogwork Librarian back in that pack and take 2 of those cards. And you might say, reasonably so, that sounds ridiculous. Why would you do that? You've just essentially given up the equity of the 7 other picks in that pack to take like 2 middling picks, right? And the context in which I will do that is like, okay, these 2 cards that are both part of the same deck and they're both powerful and reasonably synergistic, maybe they both required a little bit of commitment, which is why people didn't, you know, jump at them in this pack. They're both still in here. I'm going to take these and move in on this strategy. And it sends a really strong signal that both those cards are gone and you got to take them in one fell swoop where the risk was removed, basically. You didn't have to wait until you didn't have to take one speculating on getting the other, right? And this obviously, I think it's very obvious this makes a lot of sense with like hard combo pieces, right? Like if you can put Cogwork Librarian back in a pack to take Splinter Twin and Deceiver Exarch, awesome, amazing. Everyone would agree that's great. But I also think it's really good to take just 2 synergistic cards that are powerful in the right deck to signal that that deck is totally closed and to know that you get in there on a really strong footing.
Yeah, it's also relevant in contexts where you have multiple Cogwork Librarians. You can use multiple at once, so you would put 2 Cogwork Librarians in a pack and end up taking 3 cards, which I actually had the opportunity to do in the last draft we did of your cube, and it was really fun to go into pack 2, having a bunch of Cogwork librarians banked up and just being like, oh, cool, here's exactly what you're saying, multiple cards that all fit into this theme, I'm just going to cash in a bunch of these, and my deck sort of feels like it has a cohesive strategy all in one quote-unquote pick.
Yeah, that is something that I think is maybe a little unintuitive. The first Cogwork librarian, you know, you get two cards for one, right? For subsequent Cogwork librarians, you always get one more card out of the pack than you put back in. You don't get two cards per librarian, right? Like, I think some people, it feels intuitive that if they put two librarians back in, they should get four cards. But no, you always have to keep the size of the pack the same. So if you're putting two librarians back, you get three picks out of the pack.
Something that's also fun about this is that the Cogwork librarians that you have, you actually have in different colored sleeves. So it adds a little bit of texture to the gameplay that you're seeing how many everybody's banked around the table. Which is technically, you're supposed to draft them face up anyway, so I don't know why we ever saw them. People weren't playing them correctly.
Why we ever...
What? Why we saw all those pink sleeves upside down.
Yeah, especially when I start everyone with the Cogwork Librarian, I'm like, don't bother announcing it. There's too much announcing of Cogwork Librarians going in and out of packs if we do that. And it is nice to be able to look around the table and see kind of where they're banked up.
It's funny, though, like... On one hand, you're saying this really changes the draft, and I think it does. It adds this next level of strategy of being able to curate the way that you're picking cards and like these kinds of opportunities to make really committal picks and picks that are change the way that you're drafting in a meaningful way. But for all of that, I don't find it to be changing the draft in a way that's disruptive at all. Like, it still feels like I'm just drafting. I just have this additional opportunity to sometimes control my draft a little bit more, which is something I was a little bit concerned by the first time we did this. I was like, is this just going to be this like weird, wacky, everything's all about this like new mechanic now? And honestly, not really. It just feels like drafting plus a little extra.
Yeah, I don't think it's disruptive either. I do think that it does make the draft kind of substantially more complicated. Like, if there were people that were brand new to the Bun Magic Cube or newer to Cube Draft, I would not get the A Cogwork Librarians out, just because, like you said, it's an additional layer of decision making. You have to have a decent grasp on how you would draft this cube normally to have a sense of how you would integrate Cogwork Librarians into that draft strategy. I think it's just overwhelming for people that are, you know, still trying to get their footing on that sort of first level. But yeah, I don't think it's disruptive, which is, I think, the best thing to say about Cogwork Librarian is that, like you said, you could, any of you listening can just put a copy of Cogwork Librarian in your cube, or any of you listening could just go buy eight and put them in your token box, and you could just do this to any cube, and I am like 100% confident it would not break anybody's cube listening. And it's so rare that we can ever say anything like that.
I mean, I don't know if I agree even that it is adding that much more complexity to people who are unfamiliar with the environment, because it's very much opt-in. You can sort of ignore it and, like, you know, maybe you use it once in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, but ignoring
it... But I think it does advantage the players who are using it, though. So I think that I would be mostly concerned if I'm playing with a group of mixed skill level, that the people that know how to use it would really be able to take advantage of it, and it might just sort of skew win rates a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you can ignore it. You can always ignore anything in a draft, but if you're ignoring...
Not true.
No, it is true. You can just ignore an archetype if you don't know how to play it,
and just never take any cards
from it, even if it ends up being correct at your seat. That doesn't feel good, though. It feels bad to know that you're kind of just, like, giving up equity. If you're like, if I knew how this worked, I'd be doing so much better, but I just don't. Like, that's not a great feeling, I think, for most people.
Yeah, that's fair. People also go really deep on this card and do all kinds of other wacky things with it. It is a beloved card by cube designers. I think this was even a comment some of the CubeCon organizers made, that somebody was like, well, did you have any, like, first impressions of the set of cubes that got selected through the voting process? And they were just like... People sure do love Cogwork Librarian. It's in like half of these lists. Don't quote me on that, but I think it is in a ton of the lists. People also end up doing sort of like custom things with it. I know some people are frustrated with the fact that it is kind of not a card that you're going to put in your deck almost ever, being just a 4-mana 3/3. So some people have taken like the Unfinity stickers and things like that to juice it up a little bit. I think that's kind of cool, but at the same time, like, I think that the fact that it is a sort of unplayable card was intentional, because they want people to be comfortable putting it back in the pack. So I think as is, it works pretty well.
I do almost wish that it just didn't have a mana cost and a power and toughness and a type line. Like, I understand why they gave it all of those things, so that it like more easily meshed with the mechanics of the game, but that's part of why I think it is a little confusing for people that are unfamiliar
that's
with Cogwork Librarians or unfamiliar with the cube they're drafting. They're like, why is there a 4-mana 3/3 in this pack? You know, it's just more... It's added distraction. We talk about this all the time. A bunch of text that doesn't matter on a card. And
that's a great point. I mean, I would say, for me, the ideal place that it would fit would be, like, if it was played in decks, like, 15% of the time. Like, it was still not a good card, so you were happy to put it back in packs, but it was, like, reasonable filler. But you know, that's a really hard needle to thread, especially when we're talking about a format cluster like Cube, where that just wouldn't be universally true. That I think it makes sense for the designers of this card to skew to making it less playable.
I did have a thought when I started drafting with this full pack of eight. Like, I think the Bun Magic Cube is too lean, too efficient, too powerful for this to be reasonable, but I think at a slightly lower power level, like, for example, definitely at regular Cube power level, I think it'd be possible to put cards in the cube that, when you drafted with the eight Cogwork Librarians, would somehow make the Cogwork Librarians playable, right?
Yeah, so listener Adam actually wrote in, and they do something similar to that. They draft with a whole bunch of Cogwork Librarians, and then they also include the card Secret Summoning, which is a conspiracy that says whenever a creature with a chosen name enters the battlefield under your control, you may search your library for any number of cards with that name, reveal them, and put it into your hand. So it basically, this is a card that cares about multiples of cards, and there are a bunch of other cards that could do this in addition to this conspiracy, you know, things that just ask you to name a card name and then give some bonus. And that's a really cool way to add this second level strategy of, I actually care about this format of 3-3 just because it is a unique way for me to get multiples of the same card, which usually you don't have in most cube environments.
And we should say that in a typical cube, once you're like halfway through pack three, the Cogwork Librarians are almost no value at all. They become essentially blanks, and right. So you just get them passed for your last, you know, if we draft with eight, you often get like two as your last two picks. You're like, all right, well, I just had nothing, no other choice, had to get two Cogwork Librarians. So making them actually still live at that point in the draft where somebody would still be mid-pack three trying to hoover them up for their strategy is kind of interesting. Even a cube running things like Foundry Inspector or, is that the one that, I always get these two, there's two three mana artifact creatures from Kaladesh, Aether Revolt, one pumps power and toughness, one discounts. Mana. Both of them. Get them both in the cube so they both work with the Cogwork Librarian. Even maybe a Thrumming Stone. Like, get really wild with it. Get rippling on all your Cogwork Librarians. I don't know. It's interesting to kind of think about, if you did want to do this, make this a regular feature of the cube, what cards you could include that would turn them on and activate them as game pieces in your actual deck.
I mean, that's really cool. I do also really appreciate how flexible it is when you just have this like little module of Cogwork Librarians you can choose to use in a particular draft or not. That's just really lightweight, and it allows for that variety without any sort of like additional complexity or a lot of work to like sort out cards. As soon as you're going this next level of like having cards that care about it, you're definitely committing more of your cube to that bit, so it makes it a little bit less flexible.
All right, should we talk about all the cards that are like Cogwork Librarian but are not anywhere near as elegant or beautiful and perfect as Cogwork Librarian?
I feel like there's something else about this card we should talk about. Maybe not. We did it. The next card that is kind of similar to it is Leovold's Operative. This is 2 and a green for a 3-2. You draft it face up, just like a lot of these cards, because they matter during the draft, so you need to be aware of what's going on. And as you draft a card, you may draft an additional second card and turn Leovold's Operative face down. So this is just a twist on this mechanic where you're still getting a double-double pick, but instead of putting the card back into the pack, you just get to use it once, which is, I think to me, this really highlights how cool of a design Cogwork Librarian is, because this gets confusing. People get to the end of the draft and they're like, oh, I didn't get my last pick because one of those packs actually has one fewer cards.
That's not true. Well, it is kind of true. It's weird because you skip your next draft pick after you turn the Leovold's Operative face down.
Oh, right. Yeah, I can read this card.
So you do end up taking two out of the one pack, and then the next pack you take none out of. So you end up with the same size pool, but the packs are differently sized going around the table.
So it does just make it a little bit less clear, and it also is just less fun for me because it doesn't go back in the pack where somebody else can have an opportunity to do it again.
Also way less fun to have to look at the next pack you don't get any picks out of and
fingers crossed
I didn't make a mistake.
Yeah, so I mean, again, Cogwork Librarian is cool. There are a couple other cards that also just like manipulate the mechanics of the draft and change what you're doing. Agent of Acquisitions is a 2-mana 2/1.
I think we can just not read them. Well, I guess, except for where it obviously matters, like there are some cards where,
I mean, I think this is an interesting design. Like, this makes a lot of sense for, like, when you're talking about what can we do to make cards that matter during the draft. Basically, this lets you just draft an entire booster pack instead of drafting a particular card.
What I was going to say is I think we can skip the mana cost and power and toughness of these cards that doesn't matter, except for the sum where, like, the next one, it really matters, which
we'll
get to in a second.
That's a good point.
But for the most part, the fact that Agent of Acquisitions is a 2-mana 2/1 is irrelevant.
Yeah,
what it does is, like you said,
it lets you draft an entire pack, and then you don't take picks from the remaining cards. So again, this like ends up, you have the same number of cards in your pool. There's some weirdness in terms of what cards are being passed. But this is just playing into, again, one of those experiences that I'm sure we've had in many, many cube drafts where you're like, this whole pack is great. I wish I could just take this whole pack.
I do feel like the design for these cards might have been just a big brainstorming session where it's like, what are all the things you hear people shout at the draft
table?
Absolutely. And let's let them satisfy those desires.
So I think this design is very cool. It resonates with a specific experience that many people can relate to. However, it turns out often you don't really want to draft the whole pack as much as you think you do, and this card doesn't quite play out as much as it plays out in your dreams. It's been my experience.
This one has a Leovold's operative problem where you make that decision and then you are tortured
you
by
have to look at
having
the rest
to look
of the
at
packs.
The. I mean, you can choose not to look at them, but why would you? You're going to look at them and see what you've done. Yeah, I think realistically the best place to actually use this is with like 3 to 5 cards left in the pack.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, I'm giving up very little equity here, and of these, you know, 4 cards left in the pack, 3 are playable in my deck. The chances that I'm going to get past more playable cards at this point are slim, and it's low risk anyway because there's not going to be any huge bombs coming around this late. And the fact that it's best use case is the lowest risk, lowest fun way to use it, I think makes it kind of a little bit of a dud for me.
Yeah.
Okay, this next one, the stats do matter because that's the whole reason for this card existing. This card is Archdemon of Paliano. It's 2BB for a 5/4 flyer. So a really undercosted, powerful creature. And the reason is because when you draft it, you are forced for the remainder of the pack to draft cards at random instead of your choosing. So let's say you take it, pick 5, your last 9 picks of that pack just have to be at random from the packs instead of intentionally. So this one does not change the number of cards going around, doesn't change the size of your pool, but it has this tension of at what point in the draft, in the pack, are you willing to essentially give up your remaining picks? I mean, effectively, I think you have to assume you're not getting anything for your deck from those picks at random, and in exchange for this undercosted flyer.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is only going to make sense in an environment where a 4-mana 5/4 flyer is a very relevant power outlier, and you're getting rewarded for giving up some of your last picks, but I do really love that sort of conceit of this card gets more and more powerful as it goes later and later in the pack. It's just, like, a very cool tension.
That is a cool tension, that you can feel it getting more powerful, and, like, you might not think it's the right time to take it, but know that if you pass it to your opponent, it's that much more the right time for them to take it, that it gets kind of weird. I will say, too, I think this one, the fact that it's a colored card that you do want to put in your deck means that having to announce it is really giving up actual draft information in the way that having to announce all these other ones is just kind of a implementation detail. I don't want to announce that I'm drafting black necessarily at any point in the draft, so that's another reason that this card might be less appealing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is going to struggle in a lot of environments where just it's not a meaningful power outlier. In Bun Magic Cube, this would just not really matter.
I don't even think, if you gave everyone this at the end of the draft, I'm not even sure it'd be correct to put it in your pool.
But in my cube, this would definitely be kind of interesting. Maybe I'll give this one a try.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Whether people admit it or not, I think random chance is fun, and it would be kind of fun on some level to be like, all right, I'm committing to this, and then you just, you know, shuffle up and, you know, make your picks face up and slap them down on the table in front of you and see what you get out of each pack. Could be kind of fun. This next one, I think, is actually way more powerful than people give it credit for. Canal Dredger is a card that says when you draft it, you get the last pick out of every pack for the remainder of the draft.
These cards, I'm finding them difficult to read.
They're difficult to read and difficult to say. This one also, like a lot of these like Agent Acquisitions or Archdemon of Paliano only affect the one pack. Dredger affects the rest of the draft, not just the pack it's in. So basically, you take this pack on pick one, and you are going to get an additional 24 cards for your pool. I guess you already had 3 of those 24 cards. You're getting an additional 21 cards for your pool, which is the last pick that everyone would get out of every pack.
Yeah, this card looks kind of not that powerful. You're like, oh, I get a bunch of last picks. I get all the last picks. Like, I get all of the dredges from the draft. But it turns out not many of those last picks have to be relevant for this card to be extremely powerful. I think I've seen this mostly played in, like, environments that have powerful aggressive strategies where you just want a lot of like interchangeable cheap cards, like a critical mass makes it really, really easy to do that. And especially if those cards are kind of narrow, a lot of decks are not going to want the Savannah Lions type cards, but you just get access to so many of them, plus a bunch of potentially like very powerful sideboard cards that this card ends up being kind of a house.
Your draft pool gets 50% bigger almost by just taking a canal dredger.
I mean, assuming you take it pack one. If you take it later,
that's true. If you take it later, it's a little less good. But your draft pool gets so much bigger, and you know, it might be easy to say, oh, the last picks are all going to be unappealing, but how many times have you been drafting your cube and been like, oh my god, this is going last? Like, what a injustice to this card. Like, sometimes it just happens.
A last pick Oko this last week.
What?
It was in Turbo Cube. That didn't really
count. Okay, sure, fair. The way that the table breaks down, sometimes it's just the way the packs break, you just have really powerful cards that are left last, and it's a huge advantage to be able to get them. So the main cost of this card, I think, is that it is logistically a little bit annoying. You have to, like, announce it to the table, hey, everybody, from now on, I get everyone's last picks. People then have to think, when they're looking at the last two cards in a pack, like, okay, maybe this card's actually decent for my deck, and this card, I assume my person I'm passing to is not playing this strategy, even though it's a good card. Do I actually have to hate this card from the Canal Dredger player?
That's kind of cool, to be honest.
And then it's also just exceedingly powerful. So the question is, do you want a card this powerful in your pool? The other thing it does is it, I think, does kind of noticeably tighten the thumbscrews on all of your other drafters, especially if it goes pack one. You have three less cards for your pool. Like,
that's true.
Yes, they are last picks, but effectively now your previous pick was your last pick, right? Like, you still have last picks. They're just different last picks. So, I don't know. I think it's a powerful card. It's maybe the biggest knock against this one.
Yes, we're also getting into a different territory where this actually changes the logistics of the draft. Like, everybody's got to stop and hand a card over to one player. People who are drafting a lot are just very used to grabbing that card and, like, sticking it on the top of their deck that they've drafted so far. So it can be really easy to actually, like, mix it up and have it shuffled into your pack, and then you're like, oh, wait, which card was it? So I think that's just something to be aware of. If you're into this fun of, like, hey, this is going to be a little wacky, it's going to be a little different, we're going to be passing cards around the table in ways that we're not used to, that's great, but it can also be a little bit disruptive if that's not what you're looking for, or it's not, like, a feature that people are showing up expecting for whatever cube you're drafting.
And again, don't underestimate the power of this card. The few times I've played with it, I have been very impressed by it. I think this next one is the next most popular thing in addition to Cogwork Librarian that we see in cubes floating around.
Yeah, I see this quite a bit. Lore Seeker, it's a creature. Reveal Lore Seeker as you draft it. After you draft Lore Seeker, you may add a booster pack to the draft. So basically, you're taking this card that doesn't do anything from a pack, and you get to open a new booster pack, meaning you get a new, fresh first pick, basically.
And you get a pick out of that pack immediately.
A full pack, and then you pass it like everything else, so whatever pack you open this in, there's going to be one random big extra pack going around later in the draft of that pack. What do you think of this card?
Well, it's worth noting that, so the way this mostly gets used in cube is that you actually just get 15 additional cards from the cube instead of an actual booster pack. Though,
right.
I think, did you have this in some cube in a while, and you had the rule that you could either take cards from the cube or actually just open a booster pack?
That we did with Booster Tutor.
Booster Tutor, okay, a slightly different one.
But yeah, so for most people that are putting this in a cube, usually it's played with a cube that is bigger than it needs to be, so it has extra cards in it, so you can just grab 15 extra cards. Or what a lot of people do is construct a special Lore Seeker pack that ends up having, like, this little curated pack of special cards.
Shout out Joe Anderson.
Joe Anderson and many other people do this. I think this is...
I have not seen others, but I've seen Joe Anderson's pack. Joe basically puts, like, the power outliers in the Lore Seeker pack as a way of ensuring that they are evenly distributed around the table because they're all in one pack. It's,
right.
Like, the easiest way to, you know, not have it where, oh, this person opened up all of the Moxen or whatever. Here it's just like, no, there's a Lore Seeker pack. I even think in Joe's case, it's a pack of 8 cards, maybe? Like, I think it's just...
No, it's got the power, but then it also has a bunch of other busted stuff, like conspiracies.
Is it maybe exactly 16 cards then, so that everyone gets
exactly 2
out of it?
It also has the Black Anti-Card contract. What is that
contract
called?
Contract from Below.
Contract from Below.
Yeah.
So it's got just like a bunch of extremely powerful cards.
Anyway, yeah, there's a lot of ways you can play with this. What do I think of it? I don't know how highly I'm supposed to take it. I have not played with it enough to have a really good sense. Like, it essentially gives you a new pack one, pick one, but that advantage is also evenly distributed across the entire table. You also give the person next to you a new pack one, pick two. Like, I don't know if it's ever worth me taking this pick to introduce this to the table. I would probably not take it until there was nothing else for me in the pack, basically. If that's the agreed upon point to take it in the draft, which I'm sure it's not, I bet we'll get comments that people take it much more highly or more lowly or whatever. But if that's the way people are playing it, then it's not actually making any interesting decisions. It's just like at some point deterministically, someone will decide to add this to the draft because there's nothing good for them in their deck. I don't know. I don't tend to make cubes that are bigger than the draft pool. I really like the full design control of having full control over the pool that is being drafted. So for that reason, Lore Seeker has never been on my radar, but I see what people are interested in. It's a thing you can do that that changes the draft.
I don't want to belabor it too much, but I'll be honest, I really don't like this card because I think it just lacks...
Pop off on one of Anthony Maddox's classic
rants. It doesn't have the same strategic depth and like interesting choice that Cogwork Librarian does. Instead, it's just like, when is the pick in this, the other thing that I would take out of this pack, worse than a fresh crack at a new pack when pick one. And that depth is just not that exciting to me, and it should, for it to be worth like the logistical complexity,
it does cause
the
logistical
confusion of the one extra pack going around.
Because you know someone across the table didn't hear that it was opened and is like, why did I just get past a pack of 10 cards? It's like, well, because we're doing this thing now.
And I also, honestly, I personally don't love the idea of like a special curated pack either, because then somebody who knows the environment, knows what those cards are, is again just making a choice between, is any of these cards better than the card I would take out of that curated set? So from a strategic standpoint, I feel like that just really doesn't hit any notes that are fun for me. What I do think it offers is like this very cool story moment. So someone else I know who did this made like a pack of all planeswalkers in an environment that didn't have a lot of planeswalkers. And it's like this exciting moment of you hand somebody this pack and they're like, oh boy, look at all these planeswalkers I've never seen before, or have seen before. And I'm excited to, you know, get an opportunity to play with them. I think it's a very cool story moment. But again, it's like, once you kind of know that bit, is it still going to be fun the second and third time you do that?
I think not so much. I think that's the criticism of a lot of these cards. Like, maybe it's kind of fun the first time. How many of these cards, the fourth time you play with them, are you like still excited to do it? And the answer is Cogwork Librarian.
Yeah.
Always excited about Cogwork Librarian. The rest of these I would probably be excited to try once or twice. I mean, most of these I only have tried once or twice, and I've been like, all right, well, not for me.
Done that, yeah.
I have a lot to say about this last one. Deal Broker is a card that says, immediately after the draft, you may reveal a card in your card pool. Each other player may offer you one card in his or her card pool, their card pool by Modern Templating, in exchange, and you may accept one offer.
This is kind of wild. So this makes this whole little mini game after the draft where everybody gets to bid for one card.
I've actually seen this card played quite a bit. Was this ever in any of your cubes? Where have I played this card so much?
You've played this in Josh's cube.
I know it's in Josh's cube.
I've played it in an Andrew Magrini design.
I feel like I've played this card maybe a dozen times. I've played, I mean, been in a draft where someone opened a Deal Broker maybe a dozen times in my life. The number of times I've actually seen an exchange made, maybe two. I think what ends up happening almost inevitably, if people have not played with this card before, is the Deal Broker player offers up some piece of crap card that is not playable in their deck, that they're like, don't want, they don't care about, and every other player is like, I don't care enough to think about whether or not I should make a trade with you that. People will not even bother making offers, they'll offer some other piece of crap, and nothing gets exchanged. I think this card could actually be interesting if players were approaching it with a more like competitive mindset, which is to say that if two players get to exchange a card in their pool that they mutually agree on, they should be advantaged over the rest of the table. Like, that should help both of them. They wouldn't make the exchange unless it made their pools better. The problem is that the Deal Broker player almost never thinks of it that way and thinks, I have to offer something that is really appealing and really appealing to multiple players so that I get multiple options in return. The other option is like, maybe I took something early in a pack and I'm not drafting that color. And now it's like, okay, well, I have a lightning ball I'm not going to play. Who wants it? And there's like two red players, and you know, the you get and one offer from somebody, the other one's like, all right, he can take it. You know, then it's like, okay, it's just, it ends up like logistically not playing out the way that you want the card to play out, which is like an actual interesting bidding or like, you know, fighting back and forth for a card. So I would hazard against playing this one unless you maybe have that conversation with your play group and be like, hey, here's how I think this card should work. Like, if you take it, you should be offering something really good that appeals to lots of players. Like, again, trying to find an exchange that's mutually beneficial for you and another player. And it's just, it's a real deflating moment when the exchange just doesn't happen. And it's like, okay, well, I spent a whole draft pick on this card, and now I get nothing. Like, nobody's even bothering to look up from the building their pool to make an offer because they just don't care. Like, it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this successfully make deals, maybe more often than you have. My issue with it is just that I agree with you, like, from a gameplay standpoint, if you and I both increase our deck's win percentage by some number of points, that's increasing our win percentage versus the whole field, right? So it is strategically
correct. But you did give up a whole draft pick for it.
But giving up a card feels really
bad. And the
bad
person you exchanged with did not give up a draft pick for it. They just drafted their deck normally, and now they got to make a beneficial exchange for them.
That's true. I mean, my issue is just that it feels really not great to
loss
know
aversion,
that I
baby.
Am, well, not even loss aversion, but knowing I'm making somebody else's deck better. Like, that feels really challenging. And even though I can math through it and be like, if I help their deck, but I'm helping my deck just as much, I'm still advantaged against the field.
Because you're only,
still just,
you know,
feels
whatever,
wrong.
30% chance to actually play the person whose deck you made better.
So yeah, I mean, I think that this card just really depends on the play group. I know some play groups that play this card and it's like, this is something they look forward to. It's like, yeah, we get this like extra mini round of the auction at the end of the draft, and that's something that is really fun for them.
I think if your playgroup is like, if that's something your playgroup expects and like anticipates, then it could be really fun. The problem is, I've seen this in drafts where people just thought they were drafting, this card happens. And like I said, most of the time, people don't look up from their pool to make an offer. And the person who spent a draft pick on Deal Broker is just like, oh, I guess this card is bad and I shouldn't have drafted it. Like, I guess this was a trap and I didn't realize that no one was going to care to make an offer in exchange for me.
Yeah, that's not a good feeling. And the cost of complexity here is pretty high in terms of, like, you're reading this card and you're like, wait a minute. What does this do? If you're not expecting, like, the Draft Matters cards. But, yeah, I mean, it's all just about expectations. It is kind of funny that this card is actually one of the more playable ones in terms of a card you might actually want to put in your deck. It's a 3-mana 2/3 that has tap to draw a card and discard a card. It's not a card. I might put this in some decks.
Hey, random side note here. Why do some of these say draft the card face up and others say reveal it as you draft it? What the difference is?
Well, Loreseeker just has an effect immediately. You just add another draft pack, so it doesn't matter that it's face up. Deal Broker, I guess people might want to know who they're potentially making a deal with, and Canal Dredger also, that effect matters in subsequent packs.
It's just that Loreseeker doesn't matter after it's had its effect, so they don't it face up.
Some of them also, like Leovold's Operative, use the face-upness as a state tracker because you just turn it face down once you use the effect.
Yeah, they did that in Conspiracy Take the Crown as a way to track the state. We spent a lot more time talking about those cards than I expected. Should we try and cover these last cards more in broad strokes than necessarily talking about the rules of every single individual card?
Yeah, I think we can deal with them sort of as chunks.
What's our next chunk then, Anthony?
The next chunk is cards that ask you to name some other cards. They basically enable you to do stuff with the cards that you didn't actually draft. So I'll use one as an example. This is Arcane Savant, 3BB for a human wizard, 3/3. Before beginning a game, you can exile an instant or sorcery card that isn't in your deck. And when it enters the battlefield, you cast a copy of it. So this basically lets you use a card that you wouldn't actually play in a deck. And a lot of these do that in different ways. They either create tokens or become copies of creatures that are outside your deck. Things like that. Overall, I think these are kind of cool. It gives
it's kind of like lesson learned space a little bit here, which is a space I do really like playing in for draft. I think maybe the cost here is the specific card designs. Arcane Savant is quite popular. I've seen it in a lot of cubes. The other one I've seen pop up a bit is Volatile Chimera, which basically lets you exile a pile of creatures and then 3 creatures specifically, and then at random turn the Volatile Chimera into a copy of one of those creatures. So you have to draft 3 good creatures that you don't want to put in your deck in order to make the Volatile Chimera good. But if you can, you get this like undercosted cheat effect essentially to turn this Chimera into a giant creature. I think those are both really cool designs. Ultimately, I think it's really hard to assess how powerful these are going to be. Arcane Savant is extraordinarily powerful in a very powerful cube because
I mean, even if you just draft a removal spell, you have effectively a 5-mana Ravenous Chupacabra, but you can also draft, you know, a 10-mana sorcery that, you know, draft an ultimatum with this and suddenly you have a 5-mana ultimatum.
Right, and it's hard to 5-mana is still a lot of mana in most cubes. That's like the higher end of the curve for most environments. It's hard to understand how much better it is to have something staple to a creature, but in almost every cube, the idea that something could be reanimated or flickered or blinked or whatever means that it's so much easier to abuse Arcane Savant than it is to abuse Cruel Ultimatum or whatever. Not to mention the cards that just go infinite with Arcane Savant immediately, like Ghostly Flicker or whatever. Like, there are definitely some really broken stuff to do there. I think same goes for Volatile Chimera. It's hard as a cube designer to know how powerful these cards are, and if it's hard for you as the cube designer to assess how powerful they are, put yourself in the seat of your drafters and try and imagine how difficult it is to actually assess these cards when you're drafting them in a pack. I think that's where these cards struggle, is that kind of like the Deal Broker almost. You have to have a play group that knows the cube well enough to know how powerful these cards can be, to know how to use them to be able to actually have success with them. Because if you don't really know how to play with Volatile Chimera, you might just kind of put it in your deck and find that it doesn't work and think it's a bad card. And then it's not really having the intended effect on the draft.
Yeah. I think the other risk here is that, especially these ones that care about cards that you're naming that are not in your deck that let you, you know, cheat on mana, cheat on colors because you're not actually necessarily, you know, you draft an off-color card, now you have a way to use it. On one hand, that's pretty cool. It lets you use more of your draft picks in a way. It also means you might end up taking off-color things that maybe your opponents really needed. So, like, especially looking at Volatile Chimera, maybe you end up taking a bunch of, like, big reanimation targets, and then the player that's trying to draft a reanimator deck didn't get those cards because of this weird thing that happened. And
well, that I think is okay, because that's just, Volatile Chimera is just like a reanimation spell. You're in that style of deck, and so, of course, you also want those cards. I think, honestly, the bigger cost maybe is just that it does feel a little bit bad to have to draft a good card that doesn't go in your deck, right? Like, I think that's kind of a bummer. You spend a draft pick on something that is just making your Arcane Savant better.
You spend 2 picks on one card that you will end up drawing.
So the card has to be, you know, 2 picks worth of good because you did spend 2 picks on it. Or in the case of Volatile Chimera, you spent 4 picks on it, you know, to make that card actually playable.
So interesting designs, how they actually play out is going to be very much dependent on your cube environment. I think, like all of these, it's really about managing expectations. I would probably not be super interested in throwing one or two of these into a random cube when people aren't expecting for this kind of mechanic. But if it's what people are there for, I think there's definitely a lot you can do with these.
Volatile Chimera and the Turbo Cube. Just saying.
Huh. I don't know if that would be good. No, I'm confident it wouldn't be good. I'll think about
it. Oh, if you're confident, then I'm going to insist you put it in there for the next draft, okay, just so we can see what happens. All right, next up we have what you've labeled here, pick a number cards.
Or pick number matters. Where you take it in the draft is important.
Right. All of these cards basically say that when you draft it, you then note how many cards are drafted after it in the pack. So these have the like Archdemon of Paliano feeling, right, of they get better and better as the draft goes on. Is that, that's the case for all of them, right? I'm not.
Yeah, so like, for example,
here,
Garbage Fire is a 3 mana. It's basically a burn spell, but it deals damage equal to the number that you noted. So if you take it pack 1, pick 1, you only get a 3 mana deal 1. If you take it pick 3, you're getting an open fire. If you take it pick 5, you basically just have an unconditional removal spell. I think all these cards are pretty cool in terms of the fact that it like has that same fun tension of these cards just are like sitting in packs getting better and better, which is fun because usually it's the opposite. Usually the pack is getting worse and worse as people have taken the best cards out of it, so like the late picks end up being sometimes a little bit less exciting, or you're getting more like the replaceable filler effects, whereas these cards are actually sitting in packs improving. I think the biggest limitation here is just that there aren't a ton of them.
You also have to remember a thing, like,
yeah,
like when I played Conspiracy actual draft, I would just write it on the card with a Sharpie because it was a common and who cares. But if it's in your cube, you need some other way to note it that you're gonna not lose track of it. It's just
sticky notes.
It's kind of annoying. The other thing I'll say about these is that every other card we've talked about has interesting cube design implications, right? And that's part of the big value of all these cards, I think,
except for Cogwork Librarian.
Well, Cogwork Librarian, yes, sure. You're not really gonna change your cube design, but it does have a big effect on the draft. These other cards, they all like, they interact with the other cards in the cube in a really interesting dynamic way. Like, it matters what other cards are in the cube, matters what other cards you've taken in the draft. These cards are entirely self-contained. Like, they have this cool aspect, like you said, of getting better throughout the pack, but Garbage Fire is just a burn spell. And so it's like, it's a lot of complexity to introduce for essentially just a burn spell. And the reason I think we see these in so few cubes, it's like, why would I do all of this just for a burn spell that doesn't actually give me any additional texture or like cool design space I can play in?
Sure. I mean, so some of these others are like creatures that get bigger the later you take them, and a tapper that can tap things down more efficiently.
Yeah, it's just a creature and a tapper. Like,
I think this comes down to just like these individual designs are, yeah, maybe not worth the logistical hurdles of doing something that is very different than usually you would do. But I could definitely see, like, this is a space where I could see the most opportunity for more interesting card designs. I think what else is really cool to me about Garbage Fire especially was the way that these are worded is it actually matters what's the biggest number you've named with any Garbage
Fire.
That
is true. And these were all commons except for Cogwork Grinder, these pick number cards. So
yeah, so if you ended up getting a 5th pick Garbage Fire, then first picking your 2nd Garbage Fire actually makes a lot of sense because it
right.
is a very powerful card. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there is both a lot of interesting design space for new cards, and I think you could design cubes that are using these in a way that is more interesting.
Yeah.
When you start going into multiples.
I don't know. I mean, I think like a card like Arcane Savant or Volatile Chimera is very exciting to me to look at. It's like, here's a novel space. Like, what can I do with this card that otherwise is impossible for me to do in the history of all of Magic? Like, even though I don't play these cards for various reasons, they're at least exciting and new ground. This is, to me, is like, okay, you made a bread and butter effect cute and care about the draft. I don't see any depth there personally.
I think there's also a lot of depth in the fact that it's called Garbage Fire. So, you know, you're just getting it later and later in the pack. It's like, oh, this pack is now just the garbage cards.
Yes.
But it's getting better.
Yes. It's a good name.
Light it on fire.
It's a good name. No doubt about that.
All right. I'm going to be honest. This next chunk of cards, I'm kind of not that into. There's a number of cards that also just care about the draft and interacting with the other players in the draft. So, as an example, Paliano the High City, it's a legendary land. When you draft it, you look to the player to your right, you ask them to name a color. You look to the player on your left, ask them to play name a color, and then you choose a color. Not necessarily in that order. But the idea is it's a 3-color land, which is, in a lot of environments, quite powerful. But those three colors are chosen by the players around you. Similarly, there's some removal spells that work in the same way where you have some color restrictions, or cards that let you look at an opponent's next pick or look at a particular pick pack in the draft before it's actually been opened. I think these are really not worth the logistical hurdle. It feels very small, but when I'm in the middle of a draft and my player, sort of the player next to me, disrupts my draft and says, like, hey, name a color, I want to make that choice correctly if that's going to happen, but that means I kind of have to stop thinking about what I was thinking about in the pack I'm drafting and think about this other choice and what are the ramifications from it. This is something that I see get played a fair amount. And
Paliana specifically. I don't see almost any of the other of these cards
Regicide
in there.
Regicide I see from time to time, and it's just, to me, it's like disruptive in a subtle and annoying way that I don't really love these cards.
Yeah, I think the fact that Paliana sees play is purely the, like, powerful cards are good in cube attitude, because it is a powerful card. It's an untapped land that taps for three colors, and even if the three colors are semi-random, right, like you name one of your colors for sure, and if you're playing a three color deck, the chance that your two other opponents don't name at least one of your other colors are very slim. So yeah. Like it's a powerful card, which is why I think it sees play. But yeah, I'm off these. These feel to me like I'm glad they were made. I think it makes sense that R&D explored this space, but it felt like, what else can we do that cares about the draft? And here's something else we can do that cares about the draft. Let's make some cards in that space. But yeah, these I think draw attention to the aspects of the draft that I care least about. Like, where do I happen to be seated? What are my opponents going to do? Can I get my friend to name a color that benefits me because they're nice and I can say, hey, name blue, and they name blue and the rest of the table groans? Like, all that stuff is like not what I'm into these cards for. I think a lot of these other designs, like the ones that affect the draft in a more stable and strategic way, and the cards like, you know, Arcane Savant or Volatile Chimera that open up brand new cube design space, like, those are really interesting whether you like them or not. These, to me, yeah, they fall flat, at least for cube purposes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is, again, actually, like, even though I'm saying I don't love these designs, I think that if there were a lot more of them and they were more compelling individual card designs, then I think you could definitely have a cube environment where it's like, yeah, it's like the draft itself is going to be highly interactive. We're all going to be exchanging on some amount of information and, you know, trying to...
It almost gets into, like, un-territory at that point. Like, it almost feels like, you know, where the draft where you, like, have to call somebody in from outside the turn to, like, help you make a decision or something.
I mean, but what I'm saying is it doesn't have to be weird and wacky. Like, you could have a lot of strategic depth in, like, that, like, small amounts of information you exchange around the table, but I think that most people are not expecting that, so just having one or two of these cards is just kind of feels confusing to me.
So yeah, those are the Draft Matters card. We didn't cover actual conspiracies here. We've talked about some of the more substantial draft modifying conspiracies, like your World Knits and your Sovereign's Realms and stuff, before on previous episodes. They're a whole different thing that really change everything fundamentally at a very low level.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The conspiracies are cards that, like, only really make sense in a draft environment, but they're not Draft Matters cards in the same sense, so they don't have an effect during the draft.
Yeah, I mean,
they have an effect on your draft.
Yes,
but so do any other
strongly card. I mean, they will, like, completely, in ways that no other card is capable of, turn your pick order completely on its head. But yeah, that's a whole different topic, either for people to review previous episodes where we discussed it, or maybe for another day if we want to go into it in more depth. So end of the day, Anthony, we're both Cogwork Librarian stands, and all these other cards have their downsides.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest downside to all of them is just that they do something different, and if people aren't expecting it, that's going to be, it's going to add some overhead. It adds some cognitive load to these cards, so I would be excited if they announce another set that's going to have more Draft Matters cards, because I think there is a lot of cool space if that is the focal point of the experience. But for now, I'm kind of sticking with Cogwork Librarians.
Yeah, I would be down for them to make a whole other set of these just in case we get another Cogwork Librarian style card. I wouldn't expect many to come out of that because I do think it's a hard space to design in. But for the chance that we get one more, yeah, I'd be excited about a whole set. Thus concludes another episode of Lucky Paper Radio. Thank you for tuning in. By the time this episode comes out, we should have our Wilds of Eldraine?
Wilds of Eldraine.
We should have our Wilds of Eldraine survey up. The Scryfall just said they finished getting all the cards up today, so that survey should go up very shortly. So check out our website. There'd be a banner on the top of the page or a link in the show notes, or you can just go to luckypaper.co/survey/woe, right? It is slash survey, right? Why am I doubting that all of a sudden?
I have no idea.
I'm like 95% certain it is. Oh, well, we'll find out. The link is going to be in the show notes. Let us know what cards you are playing from Wilds of Eldraine, which is it. I'm pretty excited about. I will say, we have what? Like, I think 2 weeks, 3 weeks until we have to lock in our list for KubeCon. And I have spent so much time tuning and playtesting and working on the Bun Magic Cube that I'm really excited about Wilds About Dream. There's a lot of cards I'm interested in playing in my cube, but I'm hesitant to add anything I'm not very certain of before CubeCon, because I do want people that get to play the cube at CubeCon to have a authentic Bun Magic Cube experience, and I'm wary of making even a slight misstep in my evaluation of a card before then. So we'll see how many I end up adding before CubeCon. I expect a more conservative list, and then maybe some more after CubeCon, after the dust has settled a little bit. But
are you going to not actually change your cube until CubeCon? Because you can always lock in the list and then make changes. And
I'm not going to. I mean, no, I'm not going to change my cube. A, because I don't want to have to like keep a separate Cube Cobra list. I'm not going to make a clone or anything. That's annoying. And I just like to keep my paper cube completely in sync with Cube Cobra at all times without any exceptions, just to keep my life simple and clear. Anyway, check out the survey. All of our music is produced by DJ James Nasty. All the Magic cards are produced by Wizards of the Coast. This show is produced by Anthony and I, thinking really hard about Magic cards. I've been speaking into microphones about it. Great haircut, Anthony.
Thanks.
Looking stylish.
No more hair.
For those that, this is an audio medium, but everyone should know Anthony is looking very hot. Just picture Anthony, but
just sweating profusely.
Just picture Anthony, but even hotter than you were imagining him before. That's the best way to visualize this episode.